Hey guys, it's Corey, your favorite producer of the Tastemasters podcast. I wanted to chime in here and let you know that we had some technical difficulties with David's microphone on this episode. So you might hear his audio come in and out periodically. And when it's out, his voice is a little bit harder to hear. You might think that's a good thing or a bad thing. That's up to you to decide. But I wanted to give you the heads up so that you could be prepared to turn your audio up if you need to or down if you need to. I sincerely apologize for the inconvenience, but we'll forge ahead with this episode. So until the next technical difficulty, my friends.
This episode is brought to you by Syrup Co. When you're looking to make a killer cocktail or mocktail, Syrup Co. has you covered. Syrup Co. helps simplify the ability to create the most enjoyable beverage anywhere and at any time. From their classic handmade flavors such as vanilla bean, cherry pie, and roasted jalapeno, Jacob and Nate are enhancing the syrup experience right here in Utah. The upcoming seasonal specials are lemon, lavender, and grapefruit rosemary. Oh yeah. You bet we have these and many more Syrup Co. products on hand when we need to showcase an incredible cocktail. Trust us when we say, these are syrups that will blow you away. Until the next syrup, my friends. You're listening to the Tastemasters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques.
All right, guys, so we are here today talking about Salt City Brew Supply. So they are a hot place in Midvale, owned by Cody and Ross. Cody and Ross are joining us today. Ross is in the corner. Ross, you have a great voice. You're sexy. And you guys have the only brew supply in Midvale, right?
Yeah. One of two in Salt Lake City proper, or the metro area. A hole, and then the only one in the south part of the valley.
Gotcha. And then there's another facility you have?
Well, we were also the owners of Ogden City Brew Supply. Mm-hmm. We have since sold that to the previous manager of it, so we're not affiliated, but we talk to him all the time and nice. Help out where we can. So he's still up there. Ogden's still, serviced by a great homebrew store.
I like it. And the reason why we're here is we have a bunch of homebrewers, right? Most of us, actually all of us in this room, have been a home brewer turned commercial brewer, right?
Yep.
Oh, so, yeah. Cody, would you mind going around and just introducing everyone at the table?
I don't know any of these fools. No, I mean, from my left, I got Wendell Sorensen. We've known Wendell a long time. He used to work here a little bit work at our brew shop a little bit back in the day, and then he became a brewer at the Squasatch Co-op for a bit and was a brewer at Two Row Brewing for a long time.
It was a very short trip.
Gotcha. How short was that? A couple days, a couple months?
3 months.
That's not bad. Yeah.
Even did a quick stand up at High West, I remember.
Well, I wasn't brewing there, but I worked in the restaurant.
Yeah. Nice. Man of many talents. Mm-hmm. We have Chad Hopkins of Hopkins Brewing. He's also been in and out of our brew store over the years.
Your flow, man.
Familiar face.
I'm getting more envious of your flow. It's
Tell
gorgeous.
Me those curls, though.
We should try. I should do short hair, a little bit of salt and pepper in there, and then you should do curly hair.
I'm into it.
I'm down.
We have Carson Foss, owner and brewer at Utah Brewing, and he flew in tonight from Ogden. Boy, are his arms tired.
There's one.
Yes.
Carson, how's it be probably the most gorgeous brewer north of Salt Lake?
I'm just jealous you guys is here. I do what I can, but
have you seen me?
I've seen you. Yes, okay. I was looking on this side of the table.
Oh, that's
You're
fair.
To my
that's
left.
Fair. That's fair. Yes.
Hell yeah! So, gentlemen, you all were homebrewers at one point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. How long, Cody? How long? What time? When did you start homebrewing?
Oh, in my early to mid 20s. I think I was 24, 25 when I started homebrewing. A good close friend of mine was doing it, and I thought that's cool. So he got me into it, and I started doing extract batches here and there, and kind of the sky's the limit. It's got every brewer's probably got a long story for how it progressed, but that's how I started off, just extract brewing on my stovetop.
Ah, and then how did you meet Ross? I don't know that story actually. Does anyone else know the story how Cody met Ross?
I do.
Oh.
It's a good romantic origin story. he has very beautiful eyes, and he looked at me one day.
You do have pretty
really,
eyes.
Really though, we grew up on the same street in South Salt Lake, East Stabbington. But we lived on different sides of the street, which is important because the street was actually the dividing line from city and county school district. So we never went to the same schools, even though we grew up four or five houses apart, which is probably why we remained friends for so long. Cause I was, I was kind of an asshole in school. So yeah, he went to different schools and we just, ever since I was probably what, 2 years old, we've been friends. I mean, I literally don't have memories that don't involve Ross being like my best friend. So
shout out Ross. Ross, this is why you should be on here, man. Second half, I'm getting you on here. That's what's going on. Oh, stop. You got the eyes. I want to see them. And then, Carson, when did you start homebrewing?
I was about 24, 25 as well. Living in Omaha at the time, my wife was in med school. So on my days off, I had really nothing to do because she worked a lot. So just extract brewing on the stove, put in a bucket downstairs, and that's it. And after that, moved to Phoenix and couldn't really do it there because it was too hot.
Damn.
And then when I moved back up here in 2014, I was able to get a little bigger place and have some room, and got a cool system and really hit it hard, like, for 3 or 4 years. So that's when I met these guys at the Ogden City Brew Supply when they owned it, because that was close to my house.
About what time, what year did you meet these guys?
2015, probably.
Right. I think we opened that store in 6 years ago. So it would have been 2016,
right there.
Yeah.
So, Carson, if you will, you're a prodigy of the Ogden Brew Supply Store, right?
Yes. I came down here when Ogden didn't have what I needed, but they pretty much all the time did.
Yeah. What was your first batch you ever did from the store? Like, did you get a recipe they made? Did you get an extract here?
Like the first time homebrewing or the first time in Utah?
First time. Let's go homebrewing and then homebrewing
Utah. So the first time I ever brewed was an Alaskan Amber Kit. Cause, hey. Oh, nice. So that's what I did in Omaha, and I did something wrong. It turned out like way high alcohol. But it was a lot of fun. And then the first time here, it would probably be a pale ale or the Buffalo Soldier. I remember I came in with you guys, and I brewed that a lot at home trying to get it right because I love that Wookiee Jack from Firestone Walker. So I kept trying to get something close to Wookiee Jack, and that was like my goal. But ended up with the Buffalo Soldier.
So Buffalo Soldier, which is?
Our Black Rye IPA.
At Utah. And it's High Point, and it's sexy, it's awesome. And that is your baby then, in a way.
Yeah, that one and one the Pale Ale was the ones I brewed at home the most before I opened Utah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Yep.
All right, Chad. Down to you. When did you start homebrewing?
I was about 27.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much beer out here back then. So you got to drive to Wyoming to find any good beer and Colorado. So I just kind of got bored with the beer selection. I travel around to other states, and there's so much beer, and I'm like, man, I want to drink that. Oh, you can't get it here. Like, so started going to the Beer Nut because these guys hadn't opened yet. So actually lived in Sandy then. So that kind of pain in the ass, drive all the way downtown, or you get all your ingredients like, shit, I need yeast. Like,
yes.
So I was pretty stoked when these guys first opened.
Yeah.
So
is that when you first met Cody and Ross is when this store opened?
Yeah.
Because they didn't exist before then. But now they exist, the store.
Here we are.
Hey.
Hey.
That's really cool.
And also working to change the beer selection in Utah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
We like that.
Yeah, very much so. Wendell.
Yes.
To you, man. When did you start homebrewing?
It was probably a couple years after these guys opened up Salt City. I'd gotten a Christmas gift. It's like an intro starter kit. And from a former girlfriend, and kind of got obsessed with it after that. That's how I ended up working at Salt City. We asked for a job one day and came in for a recipe.
Do you remember what recipe that was?
That one I think was the Marzen, which I couldn't lager at the time, so it was a Mocktoberfest, I guess. Yeah, used some alt yeast, so I could ferment it at home still. It turned out pretty good.
So, if it would have failed, would you have kept homebrewing?
Yeah, probably. I'd had a couple of batches before that one that turned out pretty decent, just extract stuff. But
so how did you get into professional brewing?
Studying, really. Decided that was something I wanted to do. And while I worked here at Salt City, just tried to learn as much as I could and meet as many people as I could. And yeah.
What was the first professional brewing gig you had?
Over at the co-op, Squatters Wasatch. Just a shift brewer there. But it was a good learning experience. It was a really big system, fun to learn on.
Hell yeah, I like that. And then, I guess you guys have all once come through the Salt City Brew Supply store. Like that's
a lot.
That's so interesting.
I mean, Wendell used to mill my grain for me, so
all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a little known fact. I am almost 4,000 consecutive days employee of the day in this brew shop.
That is false.
Steven.
You're not here. Yeah.
Ross,
nearly,
Wendell.
I mean, 130 months in a row I've been employee of the month. It's quite a reign. It's a dynasty, if you will. I tried to get a plaque made that had all my name on it over and over again, but it was kind of expensive for a joke.
I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Cody, why did you start this
brew supply? Why? Why is this a thing?
I don't know. I was a home brewer, and I recognized that there was, you know, a lot of people in this valley that homebrewed that were south of where the existing homebrew store, the Beer Nut, was. And so we just thought there was a lot of opportunity. I mean, the numbers came out because we started a small website called Tribute to Beer. And the idea behind that website was to create an online petition to the DABC to put coolers in liquor stores, which, you know, at no fault of ours, they are now starting to do that. Our petition had nothing to do with it. But in doing that, we looked into what it would cost to maybe sell some homebrewing stuff to help fund the hosting for the website. And one of the suppliers gave us some of their, like, you know, demographic information about how they determine whether a market can handle one or more brew shops. And they said, you know, in Salt Lake City, there's only 270,000 residents. So honestly, we're not even sure how the Beer Nut exists on what's there. And it seems strange because they even had a warehouse here that they would not realize that even though Salt Lake City proper was only 270,000 people at the time, the metro market was like 1.2 million. And so obviously there was a huge underserved market there. And so we kind of started working on it, and it took us almost 3 years to finally get the funding together. And yeah, we got the funding together in 2010 and opened in the very spring of 2011 across in, you know, a smaller shop across the street from our existing shop. And we call it the Clown Car. And it was good. Like, we opened in the summer thinking that, yeah, we're going to open right prime homebrewing season. You know, it's when people are buying. Little do we know that nobody homebrews in the summer because they all want to be out doing outdoor activities, not indoor more activities. So we kind of eked through the summer and made it into the holidays, and we were running on fumes that first year, and then got into Christmas and sold a bunch of intro to homebrew kits and started really doubling down doing classes and trying to reach out and engage the community. And, you know, we helped kind of organize some different homebrewers into a homebrew club, which is still a really, really well involved homebrew club called Latter-day Brewers. And then the next spring, it just kept building from there, and we were off to the races. And a couple years later, we had to move into our bigger store.
That's a good problem to have, right?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it took us off guard, but it was the right kind of problem to have. You know, it was nice to see that, you know, the research you had done and the time you put into it and, like, everything you'd put on the line was starting to pay off. And so it was super exciting, and we kind of rode that wave for a couple years, opened the bigger store, and then that was meant to be a springboard to open the second store in Ogden because we felt like Ogden was an underserved market as well. So we did that in 2016, and then opened our brewery in 2019.
Yeah, right before the pandemic, before the world ended.
Nailed it. Yeah, we opened up. You know, we couldn't brew our beer until January 1st of 2020, and then our beer went on January 16th. And then they shut us down March 16th.
So nice. Look at you. What a great track record.
Opportunistic. We really nailed the timing on that one.
Yeah.
But you're here.
Yeah. We're here. Yeah. We're here.
This place is awesome.
You know, which a huge thank to the homebrewing community for sure, but also the professional brewing community for supporting us and helping us through that.
Yeah.
Through the hard time.
Just so in a way, you kind of helped bred, you know, these brewers right here, in a way.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Think about it. Chad? Carson?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I do not disagree at all.
So
yeah.
You guys started with a homebrew shop, and then now you see I come here as well. There's four professional brewers right in front of you because you guys' work and slaving over, you know, those hard times.
I mean, we were an opportunity for homebrewers to have access to, you know, different grains and different ingredients. So I tried to be really diligent about bringing in new and exciting stuff to give the, you know, the homebrewers you saw every week something new to play with every week. But in a lot of ways, you know, people like you guys, all these guys that made the jump to commercial were really the inspiration for us. Like, seeing all these homebrewers that were able to make that leap and put it all together, which is a massive project, was inspiring to us. So, you know, I learned as much from watching them go through it than they could have ever learned from me.
Yeah. What's one of the first home brewers you had that turned commercial?
Probably Brian Coleman, the
two row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I might be wrong on that.
Chance maybe.
Yeah, we had, I mean, as far as opening his own, I think it was Brian Coleman. Oh, yeah. As far as like just being a home brewer and making the leap, one of our first employees, his name was Chance Davis. He jumped ship to go work at Epic. And then he worked at UNF for a while and then moved with his wife to California, and he's been in a couple different breweries there. He was probably the first one out of our group of people that kind of made the jump to professional brewing. But he never owned his own. He was, you know, shift brewer.
Yeah,
stuff like
but
that.
He worked here.
Yep. He was our first full-time guy.
What's that like when you guys...
Yeah, he helped me out a lot.
When you guys, like, you know, raise someone like that in a way. Can you guys kind of do it?
I don't know. We don't really think of it that way, but one thing we say is, like, you know, you can learn a lot because, you know, when you spend, you know, 40 hours a week scooping grain and talking to homebrewers and seeing recipes and seeing what people are into, you can't help but, like, absorb a lot of information. And then you meet a lot of people that are connected in a lot of ways to the brewing community. And I think when you're as a brewery, I mean, me specifically, if I'm looking to hire someone for our brewery, if you have a good background in home brewing, that's a huge plus. Mm. And the brewing community, whether it's professional or home brewing in Utah, is so tight knit that, you know, if you're a good home brewer and the people know that you're looking to make the jump to become, you know, a commercial brewer, you know, chances are you're going to get an opportunity pretty quick because, you know, the home brewing community and the professional brewing community are pretty tight knit still.
That's awesome. So, Carson, I want to ask this because you were from that Ogden area. That was kind of what Cody was saying is kind of sparse.
Yeah.
So, when you moved to Ogden and you're trying to homebrew, what was going through your head? Because we had more availability here in Salt Lake City, but up north.
Well, just to give these guys a pat on the back, when I moved back to Utah and was building my homebrew shop and brewing, the only resources I have is what I can get online or get in a book. You can read all day long, but what was awesome about going into their shop is I get there, I have my recipe, but I can, like, ask a question. And, like, he's probably done it, or he's heard of somebody that's have trying to do the same thing. So they would be able to say, well, why don't you try it this way or do it this way, or I've heard this. And just their knowledge from whatever they've done personally or one of their employees or one of their homebrewers saved me so much trial and error at home, which obviously saves a lot of time because, you know, it's 2 to 3 weeks for each beer just to see what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And so being able to pick their brains and, you know, say, hey, I would really try it this way, or I did this and it didn't work, that's more valuable than any book or anything I was able to download online. And it just saved tons of time and really helped build, you know, where we're at today. So that was being able to talk to somebody that's done it, touched it, smelt it, grind it, like, that was huge.
So what was one of the first times you homebrewed something and then brought it to, like, Cody and Ross or someone within the community, within homebrewers? Mm-hmm. You're like, hey, it's kind of ballsy. I'm going to put my craft out here for people to try and kind of break down.
It was probably 2017 or 18. I started bringing little bottles into it because they judged them for me, and I think they did a Buffalo, a Pale, a Kolsch.
Oh, I do remember filling out score sheets for you back then.
You did four or five or six score sheets because you were the only judge I knew. So, yeah.
So, I mean, how was that? What was the?
It was cool, and I mindset. Like it because he's honest. If something's not good, he'll say that it wasn't very good, or maybe this did this, or try this next time. And I remember one time I was doing it at Kolsch, and he's like, that's not correct. Like, you got to try it this way.
I do remember that one.
Yeah.
I believe what I said was, don't put Maris Otter in your Kolsch.
Yeah, it was something.
Cody's very passionate about his Kolsch.
No, like, that's his baby, and so being able to...
not the style.
Yeah, it was awesome. And just being able to get that, you know, real-life experience immediately it's huge.
So going from... because I think you have... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have one of the best breweries in Ogden. Not just because you're here. Like, I talk you guys up a lot.
Oh, thanks.
But
Utah's awesome.
Utah is dope. I mean, you got great staff, great crew, great beer. It's
almost
awesome.
As beautiful as Carson.
It's a very there. Fun space.
Yeah.
Too.
Cool. Thank you.
Have you been there, Wendell?
I have not.
Bro, we're going. What are you doing after this? Let's go.
There's a flight going back up in about an hour.
There's two.
That's it.
But Carson, what's it like when you're homebrewing? What advice did you take from these guys or homebrewing that you took to commercial with you?
Attention to detail. Don't just wing it. Trial and error. You know, just test it multiple different ways. Get lots of people's opinions. So before we do a beer, like, we try to let our staff taste it, friends and family. You know, if these guys are around, we'll have a sample. That kind of stuff. Don't go in it blindly. Ask a lot of questions. And I try to not do beers that I have zero experience with because, like, there's beers I like and there's styles I like and there's others I know nothing about, and I'm really not going to try to do that because on a big system, I don't not only have the time, but I'd rather just kind of we'll venture out and do different beers all the time, but just kind of stay to what you know, and when you do venture out, take your time doing it. So
I like that, Carson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. Wendell, question for you.
Yeah.
So when you took your skills professionally, what's something you learned from the homebrew shop that resonated with you and you always used every day?
Oh, man. I remember telling people how important cleaning was all the time. And a lot of people not believing you.
I got chlorine. It'll be fine.
Mostly what you do.
You know, bleach works great.
Bleach is the best. Yeah.
Some dish soap. It's fine.
And that definitely translated going professional. That is definitely the biggest key to anything you do. If you are going to mess up a batch, you know, having it infected or something, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. It's not fun.
Wendell, have you fucked up a beer commercially? Like, have you big time?
Yeah.
What'd you learn from that? What was something you brought from learning, you know, fucking up big time?
Not to do it again. And you learn, like, that's, unfortunately, that's like the best way to learn. Like, you know, you learn what to do right, but also what not to do. Yeah. So
what's some advice you would give to someone who is homebrewing that was looking to be on that big stage, if you will, to be a commercial brewer? Not that's the big stage, but you know what I mean?
Huge.
Yeah. Just attention to detail. You know, you got to be willing to pay attention to the stuff that other people might not care about.
Oh, yeah. I like that, my man. You still homebrewing right now?
Yeah, I am.
What's the current batch you're homebrewing?
I'm working on like a Vienna Mexican lager kind of deal.
Yes, it's my favorite beer style right now.
I think we all bring that puppy in.
Yeah.
Hey, Chad, so coming from the brew supply, what's something you learned from Cody that you still use to this day?
Oh, man, a lot of recipe formulation stuff. You know, I used to go to the Beer Nut and get some kits, and then I started writing my own recipes based on what I could find online. And then I start going to the Beer Nut, and Cody's like, do you really want to put a pound of carapils in this?
Like, is that the best way to say don't
do
it?
How many times do you hear, do you really want to?
I'm
terrible.
It's like his nice way of saying, that's not correct.
Are you sure you want to use that much carapils?
Yeah. And Cody was always like straightforward about my recipes. And then he introduced me to Beersmith. He's like, dude, try this program. Like, it's free for whatever. Like, try it out. And it was huge for me. And like, holy shit, the amount of detail that's in there. So I'm very grateful that you pushed me to write better recipes. So
I think homebrewers that use Beersmith don't realize how many professional brewers use Beersmith.
It's pretty amazing the amount of like information on there and how you can adjust your recipes. So
yeah
one of the best homebrews. I remember we interviewed Tim Heron the other day, right? Uh-huh. And we were trying his homebrews, and I remember he made the comment, God, I miss homebrew. I miss the taste of homebrew. What's the difference between tasting homebrew to tasting commercial beer? What's it about homebrew that's like that nostalgic about it?
I mean, you're not trying to make money off homebrew, you know. There's just, you're not trying to cut costs or anything. I mean, and like a lot of craft beer is real similar, especially like a lot of smaller breweries. But overall, you know, kind of the bigger breweries, you can kind of tell when they change hands, change ownership. Like, oh, the recipe's changed a little bit. Might be brewed somewhere else, you know. But homebrew, it's like, I don't give a shit if you're going to sell the beer and make any money off of it. Like, you just want to make the best beer that you can possibly make. So that's what's fun about homebrew. That's going to be different. Might be weird, but
yeah. I feel like it's got a special place in your heart, homebrewing.
Yeah. It's built on passion, you know, not on money. So
I feel like everyone at this table still brews a passion. I mean, it's all there. And I love that. Yeah. Cody, you brought this up, the Beer Nut. So you decided to open a brew supply, and there's already a brew supply store here. So did you see that as competition? Did you see that as friends? Did you see what was that going into someone that already owned the market, if you will, and you came and opened your own supply store?
Well, we didn't come from the beer industry at all, so we didn't really know what to expect coming into it. And early on, the homebrew retail suppliers, the wholesale side suppliers, require you to be physically so far away from other retail stores. We actually had to have the owner of the Beer Nut, Mark Alston, sign off on us opening a store out here.
Sure. And
he didn't even hesitate. He's like, sure, it's great.
Oh,
that's good.
And that was the first kind of inclination we'd had that, like, all right, you know, this isn't going to be super competitive. This is going to be fun, you know, and the brewing community, you know, hopefully they'll support us, the homebrewing community. And they really did. And we've always tried to maintain a really positive relationship with the Beer Nut. And I think we've always done that. You know, I think maybe I'm sure there are some homebrewers that like hate them and love us and hate us and love them. I'm sure that's out there. But like, as far as like the different shops go, like, you know, the guys that are down there, Chaz and Devin and those other guys, we know them really well. I mean, those used to be our customers before that, and they, you know, moved around and now they're working over there. And whenever we run out of things, we'll buy or borrow from them and vice versa. So we've always tried to have that really nice, you know, relationship, you know, rising tide raises all ships. It's always been that way. There's never been any contention. When they do homebrew competitions, they always invite us to come judge. And when we do homebrew competitions, we always invite them to come judge. It's always been great.
What's the difference between you guys and Beer Nut, if there is?
Location. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say there's a whole lot different. It's probably just location. They serve, you know, more of the downtown kind of Salt Lake City proper area, and we're, you know, a little more suburban. We have a little more open space in our storefront, so it's a little more open. And, you know, I don't keep track of exactly what they have in stock, but we've always tried over the years to have a really good selection of different grains specifically. Because there's a lot of hop nerds out there, but I'm a grain nerd, so I always like to have, you know, like, it doesn't kill us to have 10 pounds of this random grain or 10 pounds of that random grain, because you never know when a customer wants it, and if they come in and you have it, you're going to develop a reputation for having the stuff people need, which is what we wanted to have. And they carry a ton of stuff, too, but, you know, I think over the years we've probably worked harder at keeping a few more different grains in.
And you can buy beer here.
Oh, yeah. And now you can buy beer here, which is totally different.
So let's go on that topic real quick. So you guys now have to-go beer. You guys have an entire wall dedicated to to-go beer. You have local beer. You have imported beer. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I feel like you served that up for me, and I'm too stupid to get it. Thank you. Thank you, guys. What are we here for again?
We got you.
Yeah, so we decided, you know, homebrewing's fun. But we wanted to also showcase, you know, just how amazing the craft beer scene in Utah and in America in general is. And so we went and got ourselves a liquor license, an off-prem license, which is the same license that someone like Maverick or Harmon's would have. And now we have, you know, 25 feet of coolers in here. I think we have a little over 100. Coolers.
Oh. I heard coors too.
25-foot coors.
It's a banquet.
He tapped the Rockies with that one.
Yeah. But yeah, we have a little over 150 beers right now. So a ton of build your own 4-pack, 6-pack kind of stuff. There's a ton of variety in there. It was really surprising to see how many beers that were available through the distributors you don't see anywhere that people just weren't picking up. Then also with our relationships in the brewing industry and in the beer community in general, we're able to go out and get a lot of beers that aren't distributed, so they're harder to get. Where a place like a Harmon's or a Maverick isn't going to have a beer buyer that's going to go and procure some of these beers that aren't distributed. We go out and get those. So we have, you know, the biggest selection of craft beer in Utah right now.
That's really cool. Who don't you have? You have a bunch.
Grid City.
So let's call them out, Grid City.
I mean, we're not calling anybody out, but I mean, they have their packaging operations is small, and they can only feed their own facility. There's no harm there. We don't have Grid City.
Is the goal to have almost everyone in Utah?
Yeah, I mean, the goal really is to try and carry as much of the harder to find beer as possible. Like, we can't fit everything. I mean, we could triple our selection, but it doesn't make sense for us to carry Pacifico and, you know, the entire portfolio of someone like. I knew it. But I mean, it doesn't make sense to carry the entire portfolio of every brewery. You know, no offense to Cutthroat. I love Cutthroat. Beer, it's special to my heart because I grew up in Utah, but you can get it anywhere, and we're not going to drive traffic into our store carrying the beers that you can get anywhere. So we try to showcase all the beers from local breweries that aren't as common, and then a lot of beer from outside of Utah that you just don't see carried locally.
Yeah,
And it's been fun, and I think, you know, we haven't really had our coming out party yet. We're going to do some advertising here pretty soon to make sure people know we're here, but the people that come in are really excited about it, and they're like, wow, there's a ton of beer here.
So who else are you still wanting to have in the store?
You know, that's a great question. I haven't seen the entire list. Unfortunately, I spend most of my day-to-day in the brewery, and Ross spends most of his days down here helping kind of fill out the beer list and stuff like that. But we'd love to get Grid City. I personally would love to get Heber Valley in here. They make great beer. We're trying to work with Offset. You know, they are also a real small operation. They don't get their beer very far, and they're kind of leery about selling beer to retail at a discount that they could sell for full price in their own space. I totally get that. But hopefully at some point we'll be able to, you know, pull in some of those breweries too, and stuff that's really hard to get. That's really what we want to have, and hopefully those relationships work out for us. We can get some more of that beer in.
What's some challenges having a local beer to go here in Utah? Brew supply store, because you can only serve up to 5%, right?
Yep, so it's all 5% or less, which is a surprising amount of beer. I mean, you know, you can't buy a double IPA at 5%, but there's a ton of beer, especially a lot of craft lagers and some of the new really creative sour beers that are in there. But there's a ton of options. You know, most breweries, especially the packaging breweries, the distribution breweries, they focus mostly on 5% or less beer because that's the beer they can get out to the most places. Yeah. And so they put most of their, not most of, they put a lot of their resources towards those beers. And that's, you know, that's what you see. Like in Bewilder, we have, you know, 6 cans right now that are all 5% or less. And I only have 2 cans that are over 5%. And it's just because I can get more, you know, I can get further out with those beers right. being 5%. Every liquor license in the state can carry it versus, you know, you eliminate an entire massive sector of, you know, the retail, you know, gas and grocery that can't carry the beer if it's over 5%.
Yeah. So what's the hours for Salt City Brew Supply? Now you're having to-go beers. You're going to extend hours? We're going to have the same hours? What's going on here?
Yeah, we're going to play it by ear a little bit. You know, we're 11 to 7 or 10:30 to 7 during the week, 9 to 6 on Sunday, 11 to 4 on or 9 to 6 on Saturday, 11 to 4 on Sunday. We definitely see the need at some point. We're going to have to extend those hours as the beer part of our business picks up. So we'll have to add bodies and have it open later because people are going to want to buy that beer later. But until then, you know, we're going to keep our hours as they are and just kind of want to grow it kind of organically. We need to see the demand that people have on it, what kind of beers people want, how much we have to backstock to meet that demand before we can even try and be open 14 hours a day, you know, to serve that.
I hope that for you. Wendell, now that you're, because you're currently homebrewing, mm-hmm. you probably come to this store a lot. Do you go to the Beer Nut as well?
No, this is closer to my house. So.
Location.
Well, and I work here, so, you know, I get a little discount.
So what's it like to have beer to go here at your homebrew shop?
That's my favorite part of every week is getting to pick out a 4 or 6 pack when I leave of something that I've never had because there's a ton of stuff that I've never seen in Utah before in the fridge. So
and you've been
and in I've been into beer yeah. for a while, so it's been a lot of fun.
So what's the best part about, like, what would you say to people who don't know is to go beer here at the Beer Supply? What would you say to them? Like, what's come in here for, open your palate to...
Well, I mean, you can find some really cool different styles of beer that people might not be used to, like a Kolsch or, you know, something like that. That's not a traditional, like, commercial style. And there's a lot of local breweries that are making those, and they're really good. You just get, like, a wide variety, and you've got some people that know a few things about beer to give you some tips.
Hell yeah, I like that. Speaking of Kolsch, I am drinking. I don't know about you guys.
I am, too.
Mm-hmm.
This is delicious.
The Utah Kolsch.
Oh, is that what we got? Nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's very good.
So, Carson, here we go.
Yes.
I want to ask you this question about the Utah Kolsch.
Yes.
Have you ever gotten feedback from Cody on
that? Is there Marisotter in it?
Well, that's probably that recipe is probably 90% his idea. So,
what's something about like?
So, Cody kind of helped you with the.
I didn't have near enough pills and malt, and I was trying to be way too creative with it. And he's like, "You sure you want to do this?" That's what he says. Right? Yeah. And he's like, "Just keep it simple. That's a big thing. Keep it simple, and don't try to be crazy. And just obviously pay attention when you're brewing it. Any mistake you make will really shine through on those beers. So, attention to detail, cleaning, temperatures, yeast selection, everything is very important. And so." Yes.
The Kolsch is one of your big sellers up there, right?
It is. We actually only can it. We did 3 kegs the last month because we had an empty tap line, and it went through very fast. But it's pretty much only in cans, and it goes all pretty much to our Salt Lake distributor for Harmon's, and I think it's only Harmon's. But we have to brew it probably every 9 to 10 weeks, a 15-barrel batch. It moves. It's. I mean, when I, in the summertime or camping or boating, I always take a flat of that because it's very drinkable.
So are you happy with your Kolsch?
I am happy. Good. The question is, is Cody happy?
Yeah. I'm happy that you're happy with your Kolsch.
Okay.
That's no, I just had it. It's delicious. It's okay. It's a great beer. Okay. And I mean, I wasn't, you know, when you have a beer like a Kolsch, like there's only so many ways you can assemble that recipe. You know, you can't, it's Pilsner malt or Kolsch malt, maybe a touch of Vienna here and there, maybe a touch of wheat here and there. And anything outside of those like pretty tight parameters really isn't a Kolsch. And so when you see somebody come in with a recipe that's maybe not using something that's kind of Kolsch-y. You'd be like, are you sure you want to do
that?
That
was me.
I mean, not Kolsch-y. I mean, I'm not the best. I mean, sometimes I don't sugarcoat things as much as I should, but
I don't either. I get in trouble with my employees all the time.
I want people to make the best beer possible, you know? If people, like, make a really great beer and they go out to their friend's house and they go, oh, man, this beer is great, you know? Oh, yeah, I made it from ingredients I bought at Salt City Brew Supply. That reflects good on us. If you make a beer that sucks and you bring it to your friend's party, like, oh, this beer sucks. Did you get that from that, you know, crappy shop, Salt City Brew Supply? Yeah, me too. Yeah. So we, you know, our goal is, like, the better beer people could make, the more beer they're going to want to make, and the more they're going to want to come back. And that was always our kind of MO, is help people make the best beer possible through any means necessary. And, you know, some people don't want as much advice. Some people want to do what they're what they've read or what they believe, and that's great. But people that want a little bit of advice, we'll give it to them where they want it.
Yeah.
And as a craft brewer, like, we want everybody to have the best beer because we want to drink more beer.
Yes.
So Matt's brewing a Kolsch tomorrow. And I got some advice from Cody on it.
Do you guys go to Cody? Well, Cody, why do people go to you for Kolsch ideas? I've heard it from many brewers. Like, hey, Cody's Kolsch is, and you even advertise that, if you will, they're top three in the state.
Well, I mean, we advertise it because it's marketing. You know, we're proud of that, though. Yeah, I mean, it's a beer-flavored beer, right, that took third in the City Weekly Best Beer in Utah, and it took third amongst a bunch of, like, really standout beers, like you know, Furta from Templin, which is a phenomenal beer, and the sour, the Pina Colada sour. I mean, those are like big, intense, flavorful beers. And then there's Kolsch.
Yeah, I was stoked to see that. I'm like, hell yeah. Thank you for having a beer-flavored beer on that,
and
it's list.
They both alluded to, it's a very, you know, it's a technique beer. It's something that's going to show when your process is wrong. You know, I think maybe they asked me about it because I've been brewing Kolsch for a long time. It's kind of always been my baby. And, you know, I'm happy to share information. I hope nobody ever thinks that I'm, like, holding back details on beers. Like, there's no secrets in my world. If you want my recipe, you can have it. And I'm happy to share the knowledge. But there's really not that much to it. You know, you just, you know, plug in the inputs, use the right stuff, hit the right temperatures.
Like, because it's not some well-kept secret that you're not going to share. No,
no, you can have them all.
Everyone here has brewed a Kolsch, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have never brewed a Kolsch. Matt's brewed a couple small batch. And then he's brewing one big batch tomorrow for the first time. So
nice.
Kind of comparing it to Cody's Kolsch.
You know? Oh, yeah. Everybody looks to Cody for the Kolsch. we get a lot of his kegs on tap, you know, his guest taps, and it's usually me and Matt drinking it all. But we're like, we want to have our own Kolsch. So maybe we should have a little Kolsch competition.
Kolsch off?
Yes.
Yeah. So we are actually having a Kolsch party in our brewery the weekend between 4th of July and 24th of July. We're going to get the Stangas and do the full Kolsch service, a full menu from the Rhineland.
Nice.
Yeah, maybe we can get some guest Kolsches on hand too. And
that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Window?
Deal.
Yes. We'll do it.
All right.
Deal.
Well, on that note, gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break.
Yep.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Hopkins Brewing Company. Hopkins Brewing is located off 21st South in Salt Lake. Hopkins has live music, local art, and they use locally grown and sustainable ingredients in both their food and craft beer. Their food menu is off the charts. Their handcrafted beer is also fantastic. Upon checking out, use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off any food. That's right. Use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off your entire meal. Come get a pint at Hopkins and support your local breweries. This episode's also brought to you by you, if you wanted to be. We are looking for sponsors and would love to have you as part of our team. Feel free to email us for details at thetastemastersdrink@gmail.com or DM us through all social media platforms.
Are back, and we've brought Ross to the show. Ross, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Ross, you are, you know, one of the brew fathers of this place. So what's it like to see your friends be commercial brewers? You got a bunch of home brewers. What's it like to be the man behind the scenes, the wizard behind the screen?
Well, I think Cody alluded to it earlier, but we don't like to take away from the things other people have done. Certainly these people that are with us today have done a lot on their own and have probably inspired us more than the reverse. But it's cool to see employees move on to be professional brewers. It's cool to see customers come in. And every week we hear somebody that's going to start a brewery, right? As soon as they make a good batch of beer and their friends like it, they come in and say, you know, I'm going to start a bat. I'm going to start a brewery. You know, what do I need to do? And it's hard not to roll your eyes to the back of your head when people say that, because we hear it so often, but we give them the information, right? They come in, and if that's the passion that they have and that's the direction they want to go, then we tell them, like, there's this thing called HomebrewCon, go to that. There's this thing called CBC, go to that. You know, here's some books you should read. Here's the steps you need to take to advance your beer geekiness to the point where you might want to open a brewery, you know, learn more about it. And it's cool to give people that direction. It's even cooler to people see, or to see people follow that passion and open something up. So,
yeah. So what's it like to have someone like Cody as a partner?
Like Cody or Cody?
Is there anyone like Cody?
I think these two are such a good balance. Like, kind of jealous of you guys. Like, have this like partnership.
Would you?
So, yeah. They're so different.
I'm like, a monster. I'd like to preface anything he says with "I am a monster."
No, Cody and I have complementary skills, I think, and I'm really glad I'm a business partner with him, because he's very numbers driven. He's very analytic. I'm a little bit more on the creative side, but he's somebody I can send my creative work to, and he can give me great advice on directions to go. So I think we complement each other really well, and ever since we were little, we wanted to open a business, so it's a natural progression. Yeah.
Yeah. We thought it would be snowboarding, but we got here
instead.
You got old.
Got old. Passions change, right?
So when you're the brains behind creating the labels for Bewilder, right?
Yeah, so I have a print background, a graphic design background in education. So marketing is the direction I like to be in. I was doing the cold side brewing at Bewilder for the first year or so. That's not really my passion. I didn't want to brew beer. I didn't want to do the cold side cleaning either. I like making labels. I like getting our message out to the masses and trying to get butts in the seats. That's what I like to do. That's my challenge every day. And I'm getting to do more and more of that right now.
So what's your message for Salt City Brewsupply?
Well, it's changing right now, and that's a big challenge for me. We've been spending 10 years telling people we don't sell beer. Like, people walk in off the street and want some beer for the last 10 years, and we tell them, I don't have beer. Go somewhere else. But now we're selling beer, and we want to get that out to the masses and tell them that not only do we have information about how to turn your beer geekiness into possibly a career, but now we have beer here to inspire you for your homebrewing side.
What's something you can only get here at the Salt City Brewsupply?
Well, so
a recipe for Kolsch.
Great Kolsch recipe.
In a couple weeks, we're going to have a bottle shop grand opening, since we're changing our model a little bit, and we have a Salt City Brewsupply beer exclusively sold here, brewed by Bewilder Brewing. That we're going to release that day. So on the 9th, is that the 9th? Yeah. So come in for that if you're listening. We're going to have that beer exclusively here. It's a small version of Bewilder's Deseret IPA, so it's a 5% version of that, which was inspired by a beer that Marshall Lent, who works for us here at Salt City Brewsupply, it was his recipe. So that turned into Deseret IPA at Bewilder, and now we have basically a home-brewed recipe in a can specifically for Salt City Brewsupply on the 9th.
I mean, saying Marshall works for us here isn't fair to what Marshall's contribution is. Marshall runs the shop. He's been the brains and everything behind the shop for the last at least 2 years. He is absolutely instrumental to what we do. He's extremely knowledgeable and passionate. And we were super excited to be able to take one of his recipes and turn it into a beer, and then also have him come in and help brew that beer and this beer, which is a smaller version of it, to be released in the brew shop that he's done so well, you know, helping grow and manage the last few years.
All right, guys, shout out Marshall. Ross, one last question for you before you bounce, you know.
Yeah.
What's future goals you have for Salt City Brew Supply? What's like the day you're like, you know what, I'm going to hang the hat? Hell yeah, Cracker Pacifico open, it's not here.
Well, if someday the legislature would open up us to actually have a bottle shop and sell High Point beer, that our goal would be to be at the ground level for that, right? So
yeah,
if we're starting to sell beer right now, yeah, and they release licenses to let us sell High Point beer, we would be one of the first to get that, I would assume. And, you know, that would change the landscape of the beer scene in Utah tremendously.
Well, Ross, I appreciate you. These boys here appreciate you as well. You are one of the goats. And thank you so much for being a dear friend.
Definitely.
Man.
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
All right, Ross. So that was Ross, guys. Yeah. You finally got Ross on the mic. That Woo! Took forever. But
we love Ross.
Yeah, we all love Ross. Cody, what's something nice about Ross you want to say real quick?
I feel like, well, before he, you know, bounced forever.
Can you keep the dead air? I mean, there's not enough time in this podcast for me to tell you what Ross does. Ross is the workhorse behind the scenes. He does all the marketing. He's my sane influence behind the scenes. Like when I'm freaking out about something, he's absolutely the one that's like, all right, maybe we should chill out a little bit. He's way more measured than I am, way less, you know, reactive and calculated. He's the guy, man. I don't know what to put it. I may be more seen and visible in the businesses, mostly because I'm willing to be in that chair and a little more outgoing, but you know, behind the scenes, Ross does the majority of the work. Really.
Yeah, yeah, I like this bromance. It's the best.
Yeah. I mean, and I have to say, every time I go to Salt City or Bewilder, I see one of you guys. And yes, and I like that. Like,
you guys are owners that are always present. And I really
at two fucking businesses. That's a lot. So
it is a lot, you know, but we didn't open it to get rich. I mean, I guess being rich would be cool, you know, or paychecks would be sweet too. But you know, we're passionate about helping people and being involved in this community. And, you know, we don't want people to ever feel like that, oh, we moved on to bigger and better things. We still want to be involved in the community. We want to keep growing the homebrew store and continue bringing new and exciting ingredients to people. And now it's evolving into the beer shop as well. You know, being on site in the brewery, like my favorite thing to do is walk around and talk to people and be like, you know, how are the beers? Are you the brewmaster? No, man, I'm just the homebrewer that made the beer, honestly. Like, I'm just a homebrewer. I still identify as a homebrewer, you know, and I probably always will because that's where my background is, my passion was. And, you know, I still firmly believe homebrewers can make every bit as good beer at home as you can in any commercial brewery. And honestly, it's probably harder because commercial systems do a lot of stuff for you that homebrew stuff doesn't do.
Yeah, they're very helpful.
Yes.
Yes.
Less moving things around.
Yeah. Wendell, what's something you've learned from Cody that you just will never forget?
I mean, Carson already kind of touched on it. I learned early on from Cody with recipes, like, keep it simple. You know, you don't have to make everything crazy. And the best parts about beers, like a Kolsch or a German Pilsner or a Czech Pils or something, is just how simple they are. And they're using really good ingredients. And they're spending, you know, their effort or, you know, paying attention to the details, make sure that that's all coming out delicious. So
what's a beer that you made that came out delicious that you were so proud of? Home brewing, commercial?
Man, I'm kind of proud of all the beers I've made, but even though, like, I've royally messed some up. But I made a Belgian double when I was at Two Row, and that was kind of my first, you know, that was my recipe. And it turned out pretty good. The only reason we brewed it was so that we could use the yeast for something bigger. So it was kind of a transition beer, you know?
Yeah.
And it probably didn't sell as fast as it would, but it's because it's a Belgian double. Nobody even knows what that is. You know, people were coming in asking, you know, I've never seen this before. So it turned out really good. I liked it. Like I said, didn't sell super fast, but... Not everybody likes bubble gum, so.
Right. Thinking about making it again?
I might do it on a homebrew scale.
Hell yeah, let us know. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Deal.
Let's bring it on here.
Yeah.
That. Carson, you mentioned something about a collaboration, possibly?
Yes.
With brewers or homebrewers, right?
Yes.
So is there a chance we could see like a homebrew, ex-homebrewers or former homebrewer collaboration? Well, not necessarily. You talked about like, we'll see like, I feel like you guys should all do a collaboration or something like that.
Yes, I think that's
fun.
Yeah, really good idea.
What's your guys' idea with the collaboration? I'm not saying I'm not trying to put you guys on the spot right now, but what's something like a homebrew collaboration? Cody, you mentioned Latter Day Brewers, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And is that still a thing? Is that kind
of
like
those guys are busy, and I mean, we at Bewilder
have always made it really a priority to engage the homebrewing community, and we've brewed multiple times with different homebrewers, their recipes, you know, recipes that we've, you know, they've won national awards with and brewed. I know Utah's done it. Yep. I know Chad's brewed with homebrewers. I know Two Rows brewed with homebrewers. I mean, all the homebrew community has been, you know, awesome. It has had an opportunity to, not all the homebrew community, but the homebrew community has had, you know, chances to brew with commercial breweries, and it's awesome that that's the case, that the commercial people see there's talent in the homebrewing ranks and try and engage that community. And I'll tell people, you know, that'll, anybody that'll listen, like, you know, the some commercial brewers, not a lot of them, but they may look down at what homebrewers are, like, oh, homebrewers are just annoying and they think they know everything, but they don't. But there is absolutely no better way to gauge where what the interest of the beer drinking community is than to sit in the homebrew shop and scoop grain for a couple days. Because you'll know exactly what people are looking for, what they're interested in, what's cool and neat and new and innovative out there by sitting there and talking to people about what they're into. And homebrewers are passionate people, you know, and you have to brew beer that, that passionate people that, that are influencing other beer drinkers are going to want.
Yeah. I like the passion. The passion is still there. Boys, you guys still have the passion at your breweries?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yes. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Do we hang up the boots when that passion's no longer there?
I don't wear boots.
Yeah. Oh, my. Do we hang up the flip-flops when it's no longer there?
That sounds like an OSHA violation.
I mean, I wear waterproof. I mean, I have waterproof shoes. I don't wear the real high-top boots, though. They're make too stinky for my feet.
Yeah. The real question is, do you put your pants on the outside of your boots or do you tuck them in?
Well, I couldn't do either because my boots are low rise.
Oh, nice.
They're like Britney Spears boots. Nice.
I switch it up, actually.
Yeah.
I don't want to get stuck in the same.
You got one in, one out?
No.
I'll do an out day and an in day.
An outie day and an in day?
Yeah, it depends on the pants, too.
Well, you have to go out because if you have them in and you spill on yourself, it's going to go down your boot. That's dangerous. Bad news.
It's all about fashion, Cody. Come on.
I mean, it could be like James, the Solstice Malt, and just, you know,
flip-flops.
That dude came in and hauled cement out of our brewery and flip-flops one day and was like, dude,
he dropped off like 1,000 pounds of pills and malt last weekend, flip-flops in his Jetta. And I'm like,
he's the best.
I think
dude.
After 3 years, you might get a truck, but it was awesome.
I love
good job,
cat.
James.
And some proper shoes.
Yeah.
Chad, what's some of the best home brews you've done that you've large scaled at your brewery?
Oh, man. Our first run of beers were all a bunch of home brews that I've just kind of perfected over the years. And then I homebrewed for about 10 years before we opened the hop. And so a lot of the recipes that we've put out there are things I did as a home brewer for a long time. And then there's some weird shit that we'll just like, let's try this, you know?
Well, speaking of which, is there some old homebrew recipes that you've made that you haven't brought up to commercial yet that you want to?
Traditional sours. We put some on small batch. But when I homebrewed, I was really passionate about sours, like traditional, no kettle sours. So I had a bunch of like little 5 to 7 gallon wine barrels and whiskey barrels and all sorts of stuff. And I would do just natural fermentation, just all wild fermentation. And I had Solera's going. I had like Goose's going. Every year I'd brew like a big batch and a big fermenter and just kind of spread it and like blend everything. And I won some medals for my traditional sours. And so eventually, you know, it'd be fun to do that.
I like that.
But,
Carr, same question.
Yes.
You got something in the homebrew that you made back in the day that you haven't brought up to Utah yet that you want to be like, hey, we're putting it on.
An amber ale, like, because I started with that Alaskan amber homebrew kit.
Amber ale is my first homebrew, too.
Yeah, and so I did an all-grain version a couple different times. And Yakima Valley Hops, that's one of our suppliers we get our hops through. We're going to do a collab with them. We're just waiting for some tank space and the labels to be finished. But we're going to do an amber ale that finishes on the drier side using, I'm trying to think of the hops. They're basically a lot higher potency.
Cryomax.
Not cryo. I'll think of it in a minute, but we're using some experimental.
Lupo Max, I'm sorry.
Not Lupo Max. I'll think of it in just a minute. But they're higher potency hops. We're going to use that at the end of the boil, and then we're using the liquid only for the dry hop. I'll think, my mind's just going blank.
Like, so I was going to ask you, was it Chris Milroy that reached out to you? He's the R&D brewer for Yakima Valley.
Yes.
So Chris Milroy was a local home brewer, part of the Lauderdale Brewers.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah, and he's now the R&D brewer for Yakima Valley. He's an awesome
badass
dude.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So fun.
So we
he's
did
super cool dude.
We built like a little recipe, and they sent us the hops, and we bought the malt, and we're going to brew it probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
And we're going to put a little bit of rye is the only thing I added different than just his traditional amber. So finishes dry, a little bit of rye, 5%, because in Utah we want to be able to put it on draft. And then we're going to use his hops the way he explained to use them and see how it turns out. So
hell yeah. Yeah. So that's – do we have a little secrets what you're going to call it? Do we know?
I think it's going to be called Trail Ride.
Trail Ride.
Yeah.
Who's designing the label?
They are, and we're influencing.
Good.
Cool.
Very good.
Yes.
Good. So it's going to be at both. Are they going to have it at their location?
We're going to sell it out of our beer shop. So I think we're going to package 20 to 40 cases, send them the rest, and then we'll probably do 10 or 16 half barrels.
That's exciting, so, man. Very cool. That's really exciting. Cool. Yeah, hell yeah. Cody, same question. Is there something that you've homebrewed that you haven't yet brought to be bewildered?
I was thinking about doing this Kolsch. There's so many. Like, that's the problem as a homebrewer, is you have so many things in the back of your head, you know, idea-wise. But we got to brew a German Pilsner last year. I'd love to do more German Pilsner. I'd love to do a Czech Pilsner. I've always had this goofy idea in the back of my head to do a Kiwi Tripel.
Okay, get down with that.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
It does. So, I got a lot of beers in the back of my head that I want to roll out. But, you know, we have four fermenters, so we're limited to the variety we can put out. We just put in a pilot system so we can start doing some smaller batch stuff, which is right in our homebrew wheelhouse, you know, like some interesting stuff. Because, like, commercially, I like to drink – if I'm going to drink beer, I want to drink three or four Pilsners, you know, like lighter, easier drinking beer-flavored beers is kind of my thing. You know, I like interesting beers. I like big hoppy beers, but I can only drink one of them probably.
Yeah.
But I also like to – to do different stuff. And so having the pilot system, hopefully we'll be able to do a lot of cool stuff with that.
That's really cool. Wendell, same question for you. What's a beer that you made home brewing that you want to upscale?
Oh, man. You know, I've probably homebrewed the least out of everybody in this room. Oh, yeah.
Wendell did make a jump pretty quick. He came in here. Yeah. I mean, he was here a year, but, you know.
I was probably here longer than that. But I at the time I lived with my parents, I didn't have a lot of space. So I wasn't brewing all the time. And a lot of times I'd take advantage of, you know, when I messed up a grain bill or something here and had some grain that needed to be used. So I wasn't always making like,
what do we call those?
Shame beers.
Shame beers. Yeah. When you mess up a grain bill, it's called a shame beer. You have to brew it.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a great idea.
Yeah. There's been some good ones and some that weren't so good.
The shameful ones.
Yeah.
A lot of carrot pills and Maris sometimes.
There was one, I think somebody asked for like 3 pounds of like Munich 2 and I gave him Munich 20. So lots of crystal malt. It was, it was a very sweet beer. So yeah, if I commercial brew again, I would like to focus on lagers. I'm kind of like Cody. I want to be able to drink three or four of something light, easy drinking.
Oh yeah.
And you know, those are hard styles to brew because there's not a lot to hide any flaws you make, you know, when you're making a, you know, 9% double IPA. There's a lot of stuff happening there that, you know, might cover up some of your mistakes a little bit, but when you're doing those
clean classic,
yeah, you don't have a lot of room for error. So,
So Chad, on that note, when you're brewing, are you ever afraid that those flaws will come out and you're just gonna get judged out the ass for your beers?
Oh, of course, yeah. You know,
home brewing's a little different. You can kind of like,
You have a bad beer when you're home brewing. You're like, this didn't turn out like I want it. And you have those friends who are like, I like it. I'll drink it. Cool. You can have that. Like,
yeah.
That's what friends are for. They'll drink your beer at your bad
beer.
Become
your own worst enemy.
Yeah.
your own biggest critic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, of course, like, you know, we've had a couple batches. I'm like, this isn't how I wanted it to turn out. And, you know, you got to dump it. And commercially, that's a lot of money.
That's tough.
That's hard to do, but like, you know, but I'm passionate about my beer. Like, sometimes you got to do it.
Yeah.
Like the Solstice Lager we just drank one time, the yeast was not very happy and it was bad and we dumped it. I was so sad because it's one of my favorite beers.
Oh, it's damn. Delicious. Yeah, but we crushed that, by the way. Thank you for bringing
delicious.
That.
Delicious. Thank you.
Super good.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's. Something you got to do sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Carson, when you are training people, did Brett come from a home brewing?
He did
background?
A little bit of home brewing, but he worked in the bottling line at Epic. Gotcha. So he wasn't on the brewing side. He just did packaging.
So because Brett's, you know.
He kicks ass.
He does. Yeah. So shout out, Brett. I know you're listening. when it comes to training people like Brett, mm-hmm. and you're trying to bring people into the brewery.
Yes.
Cody said it earlier. He likes homebrewing experience.
Yes.
But if they don't have homebrewing experience, what's the best words of advice you'd give that new green person in the brewing scene?
Be trainable. Some people are, some people aren't. I don't want somebody to do it exactly like me, but I want them to see the way I do it that way, and then have the guts or whatever to say, you know, why don't you do it this way? And more than half the time, like, oh, that's a pretty good idea. Let's do it that way. Let's put both our brains in. You know, we've kind of, me and Brett are the only two that have ever brewed at UTOG. And so we've kind of, I've probably done the first half, and the last half I've had to step back because we're growing so much and do other things. So he's brewing most of the time now. I mean, we still talk pretty much 9 times a day about everything, but trainable is the big word.
Like that.
Be able to me swallow my pride, him swallow his pride, and just learn together of the most efficient way to do things, and then open communication. My biggest thing is I don't care what mistake you make, just tell me.
Yeah.
Whatever department they're in at UTOG is that's open communication, trainable is my biggest thing because if you're smart, you can learn how to do it.
So, I like that. That's great advice.
I mean, I want to add on to that. Definitely, you have to have an open mind about things. Check your ego at the door. Brewing is so vast, and there's so much to learn about it. Nobody knows everything about brewing.
No, we've brought in a couple people, and you know, because they want a job in a brewery, and they come in and they're nose high, and they know everything. They last about 5 days. Because they're not trainable. They want to do it their way's better, and they argue with you, and it's like, well, we're doing okay, so we'll see you next time, you know?
Yeah.
Just be trainable, be happy.
It's hard to let somebody in your brew house.
Yeah.
To trust them on that equipment.
Exactly,
All that money you guys spent and the passion and all whatnot.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cody, what's something you haven't done yet commercially that you want to do?
Make money.
yes. That would be so nice.
I keep going back to it. We opened at a bad time. We're getting busier though.
St. Patty's Day was out the ad. The door was huge. We ran out of everything.
We had our best day ever on St. Patrick's Day, and thankfully people were really patient. It's one of those days that people go out, they expect to probably be in lines a little bit, but we rolled it out.
So what's for Cinco de Mayo?
We're going to have our Mexican lager, some different chorizos, because we got, an Argentinian chorizo and a Colombian chorizo and a couple different sausages we're going to roll out.
Nice.
I'm hoping we can get El Guapo out, which is our...
Which is Spanish for the guapo.
But it has a plethora of flavors. It's a Vienna lager that we use coffee, and we age the coffee in a bourbon barrel, and then put the bourbon barrel aged coffee back in the beer. I'm hoping we can get to it.
It's one of my favorite beers. We're playing catch up right now,
so I hope we can get to it. But you know, we definitely have the Mexican lager on our brew schedule, and the regular cerveza style, like a Pacifico.
Thank God.
Yes.
Can't get it at the brew supply, but I can get it at Bewilder.
I'm stopping at Smith's on the way home.
You know, I'd like to feel like a real brewery one day where we're on top of production and we're keeping up with everything and we're not just trying to figure out how to keep ahead. Yeah. And maybe that's what a real brewery is. I look at all these guys and I'm like, man, these guys have got it figured out. And, you know, Chad's hopping, he's keeping up with his 3 tanks and he's making it work in other ways. And, you know, I was just talking to Carson about how much manufacturer packaging distribution they're doing. I'm like, man, that is
so much logistics,
bringing ingredients in and dealing with all that. And Wendell came from a manufacturing or a packaging brewery background where they're brewing triple batches into big, big tanks and
wild
packaging.
Like,
and it's crazy, man. I hope one day that, I can look at the stuff they do and feel like that I'm half as good at it as these guys are and handle it with the grace that they do. One day, I have that imposter syndrome. I just feel like I'm a home brewer just trying to make my way, but it's fun to make beer. So far I like the beer we make, and hopefully I can make beer like these guys one day.
Well, I like your beer.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, Cody.
Imposter syndrome is real.
Well, you said that, but these three gentlemen will attest to you helping change their life. Yep. If it wasn't for you and Ross opening this, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, you guys wouldn't be here talking about.
They gave confidence, Because even if the beer was shitty, they're like, well,
nobody's ever accused me of building confidence in them.
Well, there's your first. I had to fly down to tell you. So.
Yeah. Oh, it's three. That counts for two. No, but see how you've built this brew supply to help people.
Yeah, and Cody's not afraid to critique and give advice, and I appreciate that. So,
but for real, man, I mean, you've changed lives. You've changed my. I'm new to the scene. You've changed my life. You've helped me out. You've called me out. My favorite phone call ever from you was you called me and you go, where the hell did we go wrong? Dude, what happened? Just because I was trying to be like, hey, make beer taste like beer at the end of the day.
Well, you asked me out of Fruity Pebbles Belgian wit. I mean, what did you expect me to say? Do you really want to put Fruity Pebbles in that?
Yeah.
I got the same thing, guys. I did. But it tastes delicious.
I appreciate people's creativity. It's fun to push the boundaries on beer.
Yeah.
And I appreciate all the things you're saying. It means a lot to me. Like, I don't know that I think of myself the same way. I mean, I always have a critique, I'll tell you that, you know, and hopefully I try and present it in a constructive way.
It's always good.
You know, but it means a lot to see the homebrewing community, you know, progress in Utah, see homebrewers we've seen coming through that are making that jump and continuing that passion. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we were just part of the journey. Like it could have been whoever was in charge of the shop or whoever was in the shop that, you know, you saw scooping grain for you. I don't know. I don't know that anything special, but appreciate you the kind words.
Yeah, no worries.
Absolutely. Carson.
Yeah.
The last thing for Cody and Ross, what's something you haven't told Cody and Ross that you want to tell them for your beer journey?
My beer journey. I'm trying to think. Well, great job with getting the beer available in a beer store, because you solve so many people's problems that walk in that say, "You guys sell beer?" Because it happened to me, and it happens to me all the time. And they walk into Utah and say, "Can I buy grain here?" I'm like, "Oh no, that's one block north." So thank you for doing that. And then secondly, with Bewilder, just you guys. They opened at the worst time possible. I was like 9 months before them, so I got about 9 months of pre-pandemic, and then they got the full brunt of it. Just keep that. Keep your head down. Keep
funny to you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep grinding. There's light at the end of the tunnel, and with your marketing and your beers, you guys are going to kill it. So, congratulations. I hope we're past that.
I appreciate it, man. I mean, yeah. I mean it when I say I've learned a lot from you guys, more than you've learned from me. Like, Wendell came in and taught us how to make kettle sours. You know, when he was at Two Row, we did a collaboration. You know, Chad may not know it, but when I ask questions about his beer, it's not that I'm trying to critique it, but I'm like, I want to figure out how you made that Solstice. And you do all Whirlpool hops in that beer, right? 100% Solstice Pilsner.
Oh, yeah.
I listened to that. Like, and I learned a ton about how to get bitterness out of Whirlpool hops in a commercial brewery to achieve a beer like that, which is spectacular. Watching you build that Buffalo Soldier, that double rye IPA, and then building, you won a NHC medal with that, didn't you?
Yeah, we got silver.
Which is incredible. And I watched that recipe go through iteration after iteration. And I'm like, man, that's what it takes to build an award-winning recipe, and you have to stick to it. And like, watching that and seeing that beer now is amazing. And I've learned from all of you guys way more than my, you know, do you really want to do this? Never got you my stupid Kolsch recommendations. But, you know, it's super inspiring to be around such creative and passionate people. And we're stoked to have been a part of this community and in our small part.
Hell yeah. Wendell, what do you got for Cody and Ross?
I mean, he's being very humble. He set the foundation, for me at least. You know, he taught me the basics, and Ross as well. You know, they were great resources when I was starting out. I could always ask them a question. They'd always give me an honest answer. It might not be the same one between the two of them, but that's the kind of the beauty of brewing. You know, there's not one way to do something. There's a million ways to do it, and the way you do it matters to you, and that's all that matters.
Hell yeah, brother. Chad, what's something you got for Cody and Ross?
I mean, I've talked to these guys a lot, you know, showed them a lot of gratitude. Like, they've, you know, they made me a better home brewer. I'm so stoked to see them with their own brewery, and to see them now kind of coming out of the COVID bullshit. Like, now to see them busy every time I go on there, like, it's rocking in there, and it's mm-hmm. I'm very stoked to see that. But also, like, this whole community, to see this whole community come full circle. You know, these guys, you know, they helped me out, and I feel like we've had advice for each other. But also, like, Cody's like, hey, I'm ordering a bunch of fruit. Like, he texted me today. He's like, I'm ordering a bunch of fruit. You want some fruit? Because they, you know, they're bigger brewery than we are. So I'm like, yeah, I need some fruit. So save on freight, like, any way we can help each other out. So, that's probably my favorite thing about this whole community.
Yeah. Like, 'cause we're a huge family, and you guys are part of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We all are part of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how far south or how far north we are. Like, we're all part of it.
And they're probably a huge part of the growth in Utah. When I plan on opening, obviously you do research. There's 22 breweries in the state of Utah when I was wanting to open. I'll bet you we're in the 50s right now. And that's literally in 4 years?
Well, I was brewery number 33. There was 40 total brew houses when we 40? Opened.
Okay.
Because it's people like Red Rock, and those guys have a couple. And then Grid City popped in behind us, and we had Heber Valley.
It's almost 100% growth.
Yeah, so like what, 42, 43 now total, total brew houses. Yeah. I mean, it's a ton.
Almost doubled in, because I did the research in 2017. So almost doubled, and homebrew shops are probably a huge part of that.
Yeah.
So, kudos.
There's a stat for you there, Cody.
Yeah. I love it, man. I love it.
You're a numbers guy like me. There you
go. Yeah, I love the numbers, you know, so. And we love homebrewing, and I don't know. Homebrewing's been a passion, and I feel like I've met so many people from so many different walks of life that are into homebrewing, and it's been super interesting like that. You know, we have Carson the pilot.
Yes.
Chaz from a restaurant background.
Yeah.
You know, Wendell, aimless youth, meandering the world, learning Spanish. Spent 6 months in South America, came back and asked for a job here. You know, like, everybody's got their own journey and the place they're coming from, and yet we all kind of find common ground in beer, and that's what's beautiful about beer is, you know, you can sit around a table, have a couple beers. It's an approachable drink for everybody. That's what it should be. You don't have to overthink it. You don't have to make it overcomplicated. It doesn't have to be too fancy. It's just beer, you know, and
it's just fucking beer.
Yeah, it's beer, man.
It brings us together. Yes. It does. And on that note, gentlemen, I want to say thank you for taking time out of your days to come out here, hanging out with us at Neutral Location. And I want to say, Ross, thank you so much for setting it up. I know he's listening somewhere. And Cody, thank you so much for not only changing these gentlemen's lives, but I look up to you in way more ways than you think. I know you probably really realize I'm not going to look at you anymore because I can't. You touch my heart in the same way you've touched these guys' hearts.
Thank you.
And I'm going to say this politically correct as I can. But, gentlemen, is there anything else you guys have to say on this episode today?
Come buy some beer.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Check out the beer.
Ball shop.
It's a super fun. If you guys go on a camping trip, go into a family barbecue, come check out the beer selection here. It's incredible.
So, Cody, give us where the location is, how to get here, and where your hours are, and how we...
Yeah, Salt City Brew Supply, 723 East, Fort Union Boulevard. You can find us online, saltcitybrewsupply.com. A lot of our beer is online. You can see it. We're getting them more and more every day. We're here during the week, 10:30 to 7, to 9 to 6 on Saturday. 11 to 4 on Sunday. Those hours may adjust with time.
Hell yeah. Gentlemen, on that note, until the next beverage, my friends.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.